Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Thanks for being here with us today. Thanks, Mike, for being with us tonight. We have a lot of things to cover, and I will let Mike cover those things because he knows better. Without further ado, Mike, who are you? Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me, David. My name is Mike McQuaid. I'm a staff engineer in the communities team in GitHub. That's kind of my day job. And then outside of that, I'm also the project leader on Homebrew, which is a Mac and now Linux package manager as well.
Oh, cool. So what is your role as staff software engineer?
So I do a little bit of everything. I guess the communities team that I'm part of is responsible for kind of helping make GitHub better for communities that work on it. But I personally kind of dive a lot a little bit. So I've been involved with some kind of product centric stuff like sponsors or whatever. But then in this case, I guess we're going to be talking on this call. Over the years, I've been involved with a fair few of the kind of development tool improvements internally inside of GitHub. And the most latest of which was CodeSpaces. So we have migrated to that.
Yeah. And that's in fact the topic of today. Because I found it really interesting. So we announced GitHub, we announced CodeSpaces a while back. It's not something, super new, but in I would say a fairly short amount of time, we were able to, to put it out in private beta first, and then public beta, and then it went GA, just recently. But I was really curious to know, and I was really surprised when at GA there was the announcement that at least a big part of the GitHub engineering had already switched or were switching to CodeSpaces. Sorry, let me address one thing in the chat. There's Asim asking, can I get a CodeSpaces for free? Actually, if you if you are in the public beta or in the public in the beta access as you were before, you can still have access for free to CodeSpaces on public repos. But if not, you need to set up an organization, and I'm afraid there's no free access yet, as far as I know. You can get the light version, if you will, the web editor. Just press the full stop on your keyboard and you access that. But so far, at least for the moment, and as far as I know, you cannot get CodeSpaces for free. All right, with that out of the way, I was saying I was really surprised reading that GitHub switched, or the GitHub engineering switched to CodeSpaces, and I think it's been a big move, and we will talk about this in a while, but. Can you give us a general idea of what the GitHub code base look like, where it come from? So what is the pre CodeSpaces situation?
Sure. So inside of GitHub, we work on, I guess, much like most of you who work on GitHub and open source projects, there's many different repositories that we use internally. Originally, GitHub, when it was first created by the founders, was just a single Rails application. And the repository for that is in the GitHub organization on GitHub. And under the GitHub organization, the repo is just called GitHub. So we refer to that sometimes internally as GitHub, i.e. the organization, the repo name, or .com, because it's GitHub.com, and that's what that's deployed from. But that repository is basically a Rails monolith. So it's pretty big. It's been around for, I guess, probably, what would it be, about 14 years at this point. It's got over 1 million commits. On disk, it's going to take like about 13 gigabytes checked out. It has probably, hundreds, if not maybe even 1,000 engineers kind of working on it on a regular basis. So it's really like a hive of activity, and there's a lot of stuff going on there. There's an awful lot of code there, and it's quite complex. So inside the organization, that's generally kind of the repo that is the most complex to deploy, the most complex to kind of set up the development environment and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, just to put that in perspective, the repo is about 14 years old, or the code is the first code is about 14 years old. And if you think about that, Azure was not there. Many services that we use right now they were just not there. I think AWS has just started at that point, and yeah, it was the only and the first one. So it's quite a bit of time. It's a fairly old code. I mean, I'm sure that throughout time many things changed, but you know, it's a very long lived repo. And because of that, and you mentioned that, you know, there were some challenges, and there are some challenges with the code base, not just for the legacy code, I guess, but you know, for the size of the repo and everything else. So what were the, you know, the main issues or the main pain points, if you will, of developing GitHub.com before CodeSpaces? So what was normal until, you know, a month ago?
Well, yeah. So I guess before we talk about the old way, I'll talk about the old way. So, like, I guess when I joined the company about 8 years ago, we had a tool called Boxen that was open source, which was basically used Puppet and Homebrew and a few other tools sort of stitched together to try and set up kind of developers' machines. And then we did a migration away from that about 6 or 7 years ago to a system based more around Homebrew and more around just kind of hooking together kind of some parts of Homebrew that already existed, improving some parts that didn't, and then kind of using some sort of shell scripts, some small web applications, this one called Strap, for kind of getting that bootstrapped onto people's machines. So at this point, the development experience was very Mac-centric. So we would, when people would join GitHub, we would recommend that they have a Mac. That's sort of our default development environment. And over time, obviously, after the Microsoft acquisition, we had a few more people using Windows machines. And we've always had a few people using kind of Linux machines, but they were sort of left to figure things out themselves. So obviously, our production servers are running on Linux rather than on Mac. So we would end up periodically having these issues where the Mac local kind of setup, we would call it the bootstrap, would have issues that weren't present on production, or maybe some developer is working on a C change or whatever, and it compiles fine on Linux, but then it doesn't compile fine on Mac, or more commonly than not, being a Homebrew maintainer, I'm deeply familiar with, Apple will push stuff like Xcode changes with new versions of compilers, which can break things under the hood without actually any of the underlying source code changing. So the issue we would have is with this kind of Mac setup system, we ended up just running into regular sort of little errors. So to get a fresh install on your machine, it on the happiest case where you have a great network connection, everything like that, you were probably talking like a couple of hours at least to kind of get things downloaded and get all the kind of projects in the monolith and the sort of sub project that the monolith kind of needs to run set up and running on your machine. And there wasn't really any meaningful amount of kind of binary caching going on there or anything like that beyond just what Homebrew and tools like that we rely on provide for you. So then, like, as a result of this, it also was quite a brittle process. Again, working on Homebrew, we've sort of found over the years that sort of whenever you're building things from source on Mac, because there's so many things underneath that can change, the Mac version, the Xcode, the compiler tools, like the libraries in Homebrew itself, it's quite hard to have a reliable, consistent developer environment. And this is what we found here as well. We were investing a lot of time to kind of helping people internally resolve like one-off issues specific to their machines. And then even when there was issues that were affecting everyone, it wasn't necessarily immediately obvious what needed to be resolved. And it didn't fit with the expertise of kind of individual teams.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, working on Mac and then having the servers on Linux, the developers didn't have the excuse it's working on my machine, because definitely the server was completely different, right?
So, exactly.
You mentioned that it's a Rails application. I'm not overly familiar with Rails. Is there any difference between the dependency you can have on Mac for the Rails application itself rather than, you know, running that on Linux or Windows?
Yeah, so I mean, for a kind of given Rails application, there's the a few hard dependencies at the very minimum. There's stuff like Ruby, but then there's various kind of gems within it, like Nukugiri. I don't know if Rails itself depends on it, but most Rails applications I see use it in some form. You know, an XML library, which then needs, well, an XML wrapper library for Ruby, which then needs a kind of CXML library there. So then again, you need to get that from Homebrew or your Linux package manager or wherever it may be. So there's this kind of chain of dependencies going down for basically even the simplest Rails application. But in a case like the GitHub one, where you, as we mentioned earlier, have a, like a 14-year-old code base, you obviously have a lot more of those dependencies and a lot more things that can break in sort of ways.
Gotcha. So at some point, I guess this became just too much, right? And when when Codespaces started taking shape, I guess GitHub engineering started looking into it. But I believe before you know, talking specifically why or how the move was done, but I guess there must have been some time in which, you know, you guys were thinking, yeah, that's a very cool service, but, you know, taking this huge Ruby monolith and try and get that running on Codespaces must be extremely complex. Why did you decide to, or why the GitHub engineering decided to still go ahead and make this move?
Yeah, so there's a few, you're completely right that it was fairly daunting and difficult for the folks involved to do this work. I must kind of confess at this point, so I got involved towards the end of the kind of migration to Codespaces effort and sort of helped polish some edges and helped kind of push the project sort of over the finish line. But, you know, I stand on the shoulders of the giants in GitHub that have spent many, many days and weeks and months kind of working on getting Codespaces working well, and folks at Microsoft that we partnered with as well. So shout out to all of them for doing great work. But yeah, so the prospect of using like basically our biggest, most high traffic and most complex repository, moving that to Codespaces was a little bit daunting. But on the flip side, so a principle we sort of subscribe to pretty heavily internally is that of kind of dog fooding, which comes from the expression eating your own dog food. So although sometimes people who don't like the idea of eating dog food use the term drinking your own champagne, or git hugging is a phrase we use internally now as well. So the idea behind this being, if we use our own software internally, and if we can take our most complex case like this and we can get something that's usable for most of our engineers, then it's going to end up making the product of Codespaces as a whole like much better for everyone. And it's going to mean that much more complex workloads are possible in Codespaces, because obviously an effort like this, you're probably unsurprised to hear, surfaces certain things which are, you know, required features in the project that in the product, which might not obviously be there otherwise. So I guess a simple example being, if you're setting up a code space for, say, something like the Homebrew package manager, if you're just hacking on the package manager itself, you just need that single repository. It's pretty quick to clone, like doing things like installing the gems and any dependencies and anything like that. Like that probably can be done on a code space, a fairly low tier one, in under 30 seconds, maybe under a minute. Whereas in the GitHub case, as I mentioned before, if you're doing a clean bootstrap on a Mac, that's 2 hours. If you're doing that on a high-end Linux machine, like the highest end one supported by Codespaces, if you're doing that from scratch every time, then you're still talking probably around an hour to do that. And obviously when a developer sets up a new Codespace, sure, wait 30 seconds a minute for the Homebrew stuff to set up, wait an hour, like it kind of makes the project fairly untenable for that use case. So that's an example where people internally kind of came up with, okay, well, we need some way of doing like pre-builds. So we need a way that we can kind of have a Codespace image that's kind of built behind the scenes, which may not always be instantly up to date with how often GitHub is updated, but at least then you can get something where the setup process has been run for you and the Codespace is ready to go straight away.
That's actually a great point. And also what you said before about, you know, using your own services. This is something, or your services or products, whatever it is, because this is something I actively advocate for. It's something, you know, I come from the Azure DevOps engineering side before, and we did exactly the same thing in there. So it was... you know, Azure DevOps Engineering was using Azure DevOps to develop Azure DevOps. And exactly as you said, because of those things, there are features in the service that otherwise wouldn't be there because of internal needs, because everything else. And also you can do a lot of more testing, right? If you use your own service, it's not just you do the minimal testing, you put it out there. No, you use it every single day to build the service itself. So it must work, right? So it's also, it makes the product more reliable and so on and so forth. But yeah, we talk a little bit about that, but how easy or difficult was, you know, transitioning from a Mac-centric development model in which everyone was, you know, working on their laptop to Code Spaces? So first of all, there's no Mac there, right? It's all Linux. It's not your own laptop anymore. You know, basically work remotely. How difficult that was, and, you know, do you know roughly how long it took?
I couldn't tell you in terms of developer hours because the answer would be a relatively large number, and it's hard to articulate as well because there's multiple levels of that migration, as you touched upon. So one of them is the most basic of, well, you install all your dependencies with a Mac, and then now you need to install them on Linux. So as I mentioned before, we had some people doing their development on Linux already, and our production servers are on Linux, so that partly solved some of the dependency issues where it's like, okay, well, we know roughly what needs to be installed and ready there from that perspective. So the next level is, I guess, when you have to kind of deal with user customizations and stuff like that. So CodeSpaces has a nice feature where it's not enabled by default, but you can go into your settings, enable it. So if you've got a dot files repository, so I've got one at like mikemcquade.files, then that has all my settings in it for my text editor and everything like that. And basically that will be auto cloned and set up if you've got a script with the right name. That's all detailed in the CodeSpaces documentation. So that will be set up automatically for you when you start your CodeSpace. So it can feel a little bit more like your own home. And I think that's the other thing that, so with those dot files, they're going to need to, if you've only ever worked on a Mac, they're going to need to be able to support Macs and Linux machines. And, you know, there may be certain tools that aren't present by default, so you might need conditionals for that. So there's a little bit of work for individual developers to make sure that their dot files are working, but hopefully that's a one-off thing. And another thing is a mind space like sort of change, where you may have heard the expression, you mentioned AWS and kind of DevOps stuff recently. And, you know, 20 years ago, we were all just manually setting up our servers kind of pretty much one by one. And I mean, I'm not sure whether 20 years ago, stuff like Chef and Puppet and Ansible existed, but certainly they weren't widely used. And we weren't deploying all our machines onto, you know, ephemeral AWS or Azure or Google Cloud instances. So it's had this real mindset change in how we do system administration and DevOps or infrastructure or whatever you want to call it in the industry. And the expression I've heard for that I like is the idea that your servers are now cattle rather than pets. So rather than these, like, you know how many there are and you kind of really keep individual care of each individual one, it's more like, well, I've got a bunch of these things which effectively all need to be treated pretty similarly, and I need a process so I can deal with hundreds or thousands or whatever of these cattle rather than, you know, I don't know many people that would have hundreds or thousands of dogs or cats in their house. But yeah, so it's now with CodeSpaces taking this similar approach to your developer environment. So the CodeSpace are essentially designed to be fairly disposable. Like, they aren't destroyed unless you select them to be destroyed, or you haven't accessed them in a certain period of time and you've made like no changes to them whatsoever. But it's helpful to sort of change your mindset to one where you can kind of create a CodeSpace, maybe for a branch, you work on it for a while, maybe just a couple of hours, then when you're done, you might just delete that code space immediately. And then when you come back to that branch, or when you want to make another change later, you come back and start up a new code space. And what that does is it pushes you towards the idea of, well, some good practice anyway, where committing and pushing your changes, even if they're maybe not ready quite yet to go into production, like that's a good practice to get behind. The idea of not having lots of kind of working state just sitting on your laptop is a good process to get behind. And also, I think the idea of, like, if you have a repetitive task, rather than almost like you carefully crafting your local setup of, say, the kind of GitHub database to have all the stuff you want, well, make a script for that so you can run that every time automatically when your code space starts up, or manually. But also then that's potentially work that you can share with your team. If you're working on something like GitHub sponsors, and this is an example of where we did have a seed script like this in advance, you want a kind of seed of data there so I can have on my kind of local, like now in code spaces setup of the Rails monolith, I might want to have 20 sponsors or 20 projects that can be sponsored or whatever, like in that project automatically without having to click through and create all those manually. So it kind of, I think, pushes you towards a process that makes it easier to onboard new people onto teams as well.
And actually, you mentioned something really interesting, which is data. Because people think of code spaces just for you know, I have my code there and you know, I do whatever I have to do with my code. But what about database, right? As far as I can understand, I think you are kind of having some database running in code spaces to support the application. How is that done?
So essentially, under the hood, it's worth thinking about, like, the architecture of code spaces is it's kind of tying together three elements. So effectively, you have the integration with GitHub. So it's kind of tied on a repository level, and that's where your configuration and everything like that can live. And then that ties to the ability to create, like, Azure VMs, essentially. On, I mean, Azure is not really exposed anywhere, but that's what we're using underneath the hood. And you're, like, effectively creating these VMs based on the configuration in that repository. And then the third part of that is not required, and we're trying to make it much easier to not do this if you want to, but, like, the happiest path is then using something like Visual Studio Code, which then simplifies the setup of code spaces for you, allows you to kind of connect to the code space and do the bits need to be fast locally and the bits that can be done on the server side. And then it just feels on your local machine like you're just working on your local machine, but then that's all being passed through to the VM on that server. So from that perspective, it's a VM like any other. So in the case of the Rails monolith and many other services like that, you would just install and start MySQL, Postgres, whatever database of choice you're using. And then you can have that running and connect to your kind of Rails server and stuff like that on the code spaces machine. And you could have that all set up automatically in your kind of code spaces setup, the dev container JSON, which defines kind of what steps need to be run at what point. But you can also do a certain amount of port forwarding there as well. So if you need to manually be able to poke at the database, you can forward that through the Visual Studio Code interface, for example, so that you could have your MySQL database port forwarded to a local one, which you could then use like a MySQL either GUI client or just the command line client that comes with MySQL to go and query that database and kind of poke around and see what's going on. And obviously, because this is just a VM specific database, that's kind of safe to do, and it's kind of quite easy to be able to manipulate the data that way.
Yeah, and actually, I was thinking while you were talking that this is pretty cool, because, you know, one of the problems that a lot of developers have is, you know, we have the development environment, right? And maybe everyone is developing on their laptop, but then they share, like, a common database, for example, because it's maybe too expensive or too costly in terms of resources running everything on the laptop, let's say. And the result of that is that if I change something and then you change something and someone else changes something else, the database is a mess. And then maybe I can't actually work because, you know, someone else deleted a row or configuration change and so on and so forth. But if I do that in code spaces, I can have my own database. And, you know, whatever I do, I know that it's, you know, my changes, and I know what I've done in theory, then we can talk about that. And I can work without the noisy neighbors, if you will, right? In that sense. Cool. All right, so I think you've talked about those already, but one another thing that I was thinking of is what other benefits you've seen working on GitHub.com with CodeSpaces, like apart from the obvious one that you already cover, like, you know, it's faster, if it mess up something, you can destroy and recreate, and you can have like a configuration and pre-build and so on and so forth. But did you see any advantage or any benefits in terms of, you know, I can ship faster, or I can, you know, whatever along those lines?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, other than the benefits we talked about already, I think it's worth, again, jumping back to like the system before. So when I joined GitHub, you were probably talking, you know, 8 hours, maybe 12 hours. So 1 to 2 kind of work days to get set up to be able to do development on the monolith. And then with the last kind of iteration from whatever, 6 years ago, it was, you know, you're probably talking more about like a couple of hours. Whereas now CodeSpaces, as long as I've got, say, Visual Studio Code installed on my machine and I'm logged into GitHub in a browser, you're literally talking 30 seconds to a minute in order to actually be able to get started and have a setup which is all running, which you can have a server started immediately and everything like that. And I think that's huge from a perspective of obviously being able to onboard people are like much quicker and much easier. Being isolated from problems on your developer laptop, you know, if your local homebrew installation is borked or whatever it may be, then you can go and start the CodeSpaces. Again, the cattle not pets thing is, even if your CodeSpaces gets messed up, you can just push your changes, delete it, recreate it, and there you go, you're back to a clean state again. But I think also it's nice if you've got, you know, a Mac with a noisy fan that goes off every so often when you're doing intensive things. I'm not using my M1 Mac for all my day-to-day work yet, but that's significantly quieter. But my Intel one, again, when I'd be compiling stuff for GitHub, it would, you know, sound like an airplane taking off. So it's nice because most of that logic is now all pushed onto the server side in this kind of VM. So you can kind of save yourself resources that way. It basically just overall, I think it's a sort of quicker, cleaner, more isolated experience, which in my opinion is kind of the next big almost like step forward in kind of develop productivity from my perspective.
Yeah, I totally agree. Do you think that has or had an impact on like how frequent we're able to ship features, or the way we ship features, or not?
I think it might be too soon to tell because we don't yet have absolutely everyone using it, and the people who have not been using it for super long and all this type of stuff. So in a year or 2 years, I think it would be easier to look at that. But I mean, we have benchmarks from the kind of Mac stuff where people were spending, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours every week in aggregate kind of running Bootstrap and resetting things up or whatever. And while they're doing that, you know, maybe they can do some amount of work in parallel, but it's not easy to do. So I would expect it will have increases on developer productivity because most of the costs that I mentioned before that need to be kind of paid with transition and setup and like updating your dot files and configuring your code space, those are mostly kind of one-off kind of fixed costs. Whereas with the previous setup we had, there was a certain amount of just costs of things would break, things need to be rebuilt, that slows down a whole lot of processes a whole lot of the time.
I agree. I think the developer productivity, I've been using, you know, CodeSpaces for my small personal projects. So I can't talk about, you know, huge team developer productivity. But also when I talk, you know, with the clients, the productivity side is definitely one big topic. And I think, as you said, maybe it's too early, but in the long run, I think that will be that will have a huge impact on productivity. It sounds too good to be true. Have you noticed any issue or any limits? Have you hit any limit that you didn't have before, for example, when developing on Mac or anything?
Yeah, so I mean, the fairly obvious one is because it requires a constant internet connection if you're on a plane or you have intermittent internet access or very bad internet access, then that's going to be problematic. But in my experience, you know, most of us require the internet to do most of our jobs nowadays. So, you know, you can't do video calls, least, if you can't go on Stack Overflow. You can't
exactly. I was about to say Stack Overflow. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you're going to be somewhat limited anyway. I guess, but it is a meaningful limit. I guess another one is if you're used to using, say, Homebrew all the time, you can install Homebrew in the code spaces container if you wish, but you know, it may make sense to kind of get skilled up on the underlying kind of, I forget whether it's a Debian or Ubuntu image or whatever, and figuring out how to do that. So if you're used to only doing CLI stuff on Mac, then it may require a bit of a kind of shift to kind of get over there. As mentioned before as well, if you're sort of jumping between projects that are in code spaces and projects that aren't, you're going to need your dot files to work on probably Mac and Linux in some way. So again, that requires a certain amount of individual kind of porting of your own preferences and setups and tools.
But I guess also that could be like a one-off thing, right? Sorry to cut you off, but the part we were talking about, like the customizations and the settings, it may require a little bit of work on those, but I think, as I said, that they could be probably a one-off thing, because as soon as you have them working, then you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess that's the thing. It is kind of a mindset change, and you know, like moving your, if you move companies and you've been working on a Mac and they say, oh, well, you have to use a Windows machine or a Linux machine or whatever it may be, you know, it requires just a certain amount of kind of friction in order to kind of get over that hump and be as productive in the new environment as you were in the old one. But as you say, it's far from insurmountable. I guess another thing that's sort of worth mentioning on that perspective is if you're used to having, like, being very, very reliant on tools that require a direct connection to the, say, like the source tree or whatever. So if you're using tools where, say, like a Git client, like I use the kind of fork Mac app for doing some Git stuff sometimes. And when I'm using CodeSpaces instead, I have to kind of use the CodeSpace, either something in the CLI that I can do that way, or I use the Visual Studio Code built-in kind of Git support or one of the plugins there or whatever. And again, it's more an adjustment required there, but I guess you are slightly limited in terms of the number of tools you can use beyond Visual Studio and in the command line, because the GUI tools are not as, you know, you could do stuff. I've seen people experiment with stuff like X forwarding or setting up a VNC server, but you know, at that point you're probably going a little bit deeper than the tool intends you to go.
Yeah, you probably don't want to do that. But on the other side, you know, all the VS Code extensions basically work in code spaces. Now,
yep.
There are some extensions that are not very good. There are a lot of extensions that are pretty good. Of course, you know, if you have a specialized tool, that obviously is always going to be better than an extension of VS Code. But you know, I think there's quite a bit of things you can still do. Even without using any other tool, as you said, it's just a mindset shift, and you know, you need to adapt to the new tool. But exactly as you said, it would be the same thing if not even if you change company, but now if you change team and you go to work on something else within the same company, you may need to do the same kind of adjustments or similar ones. So, and I don't think there's any. As far as I have seen, at least, there's no big like technical limitation or anything like that, or issue that I've in my limited experience I've encountered, because you know the machines can scale. So if you know, even maybe you start small, you see that it doesn't quite fit your workflow or your project, you can always go bigger. You have the way to, you know, disconnect and put it to sleep, so you don't actually pay when you're not using. So that's also a big plus, because something people don't normally realize is that, you know, if you need to buy a laptop and I buy you a beefy laptop, that's been bought. You can't, you know, say, no, today I don't pay because it's Sunday, I don't use it, right? While on CodeSpaces, you can do that. So I think you can spread the cost on a longer period of time, or you can, you know, as I mentioned before, you can scale. So maybe today, or normally you just use like a, you know, middle tier machine, but tomorrow you know that you have to do something more that requires more resources, you can just scale up for, you know, a couple of hours and then you scale down again. And it's very, very flexible in that sense. Cool. what is the future? So what is, you know, I guess first thing will be having everyone, you know, in the engineering team using GitHub. I think that is probably the first one. But where do you see this going?
Sure. So there's some kind of open source projects that help kind of integrate GitHub and CodeSpaces through the command line a bit easier. So I see that workflow becoming easier. So at the moment, the kind of happiest path is if you're using Visual Studio Code and say you, if it's your preferred editor of choice already, and you're used to kind of working mainly within it, you're going to have a great time with CodeSpaces. If you're using the command line and you kind of are used to just doing things in a terminal, maybe with tmux or screen or vim or whatever it may be, then again, given how things are right now, like there's probably some room for polish, and where we have people internally working on that stuff, but you're gonna have a fairly good time. I think the tricky middle ground right now, and I do see us improving the story for this in the future, is if you say rely heavily on something like a JetBrains IDE or another kind of graphical editor that is not Visual Studio Code, that is not kind of easily just run in the terminal through an SSH connection to the code space, then we don't have a great story for that yet. But again, we have people internally that want that. So that's going to be something which I would be very surprised that we do not solve in some form in the future. And in general, I guess I see the usual kind of polish and improvements that kind of come with most GitHub features, that as we use it ourselves, as we get feedback from customers and users and open source developers, we'll make sure that we make it better, we make it more reliable, and we basically keep shipping and improving it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I can also add that, you know, I work with mostly enterprise clients, and I've seen a lot of interest for CodeSpaces in the enterprise space. Good thing is that, you know, with VS Code, we kind of open the doors also to CodeSpaces, because, you know, VS Code has been the quickest adopted IDE ever, or something like that. And there's a lot of enterprise clients that already use VS Code. So as you mentioned, the step forward into CodeSpaces is already easier. And as you said, there are things that may need to be polished or may need to be streamlined a little bit more. But I see a lot of interest in the community. I see a lot of interest in the enterprise world, and I'm really excited for what the future looks like, because I truly believe that this is the future of software development, for many different reasons. You know, I've been in a situation with a client that they were super super strict on security, and you know, they had even, you know, USB ports disabled. They had, you know, a lot of different things to prevent, you know, code leak and, you know, all the security measures. And that's something that, for example, we haven't mentioned, but CodeSpaces is really good at, because, you know, the code is nowhere near your laptop or your screen or anything. Yeah, the only way you have to steal the code is if you start screenshotting the CodeSpaces screens, but good luck, right? So how's the approach? I don't know if you know this. How's the approach on security for CodeSpaces within GitHub engineering? Is it something that's being looked at? I mean, internally, did you see any security improvement in that sense using GitHub?
Yeah, so I'm not on the security team and haven't done really much in the way of meaningful security work at GitHub, so I wouldn't want to stray too much outside my swim lane and comment on things that I'm not familiar with, but. Yeah, as you mentioned, like there's an obvious potential benefit of not having the physical kind of source code for your products on a local developer's machine. You know, there's various, you know, with Macs nowadays, certainly at least, there's, you know, my laptop gets stolen, the chances of anyone getting through the full disk encryption and find my Mac and all that type of stuff is minimal at best. But if you assume that, you know, developers in a different organization, perhaps not using a Mac or perhaps without full disk encryption, they could just have to be expected in the course of their work to kind of have all their source code checked out on the local machine. And obviously with CodeSpaces, they don't have to do that. So that can provide potentially, you know, some peace of mind for both the employer and the employee, that if their work laptop gets stolen or whatever, it's not, and they're working on something that's hyper secret, then it's not the end of the world, because that code is not living on their laptop. It's living on the code spaces that are in the cloud, and hopefully it's been pushed up to the repository so they don't lose their work anyway.
Yeah, that's the only thing. You just need to remember to commit and push, right?
Yeah. Although your code spaces are not, as I mentioned earlier, you know, they're not, you know, torn down. I think it's 30 days with zero activity whatsoever, they would be get torn down. But, you know, if you go away from your computer and come back, they're suspended, but they're not destroyed. And that kind of file system data is maintained regardless. So,
yeah, remember to push, at least if you go to a very long vacation, then it's better if you push the code.
Well, yeah, I mean, I in a previous life, I wrote a Git book, and that's generally my argument with code in Git is that it's very hard to accidentally lose Git data that you've committed and pushed somewhere else. Like if you've done that, then you can recover it in some form later on pretty easily. So it's just not a bad backup principle, even if you're not ready to open a pull request quite yet.
I totally agree. All right. There's anything else you want to add on code spaces in general? If anyone else have any question in the chat, feel free to ask. We are here to answer. There is one question that asks if there will be basically any yearly plan for code spaces. I don't know. I know that now is like pay as you go, and it's on hourly basis. I don't know. I have no idea on the commercial side. I don't know if you know, Mike.
I don't know either. I don't know about the financial planning for CodeSpaces, but I mean, obviously, CodeSpaces is something with the pricing model. Like it costs money for GitHub and Microsoft to like physically kind of have those VMs up and running. So I guess that for me, at least, you know, maybe there's some different pricing model that we have in future, but yeah, I guess in the short term, at least I haven't heard anything about
neither did I.
Model for a certain price. So,
And also, you know, if you think that the smaller machine starts at like 0.18 USD per hour. So, I mean, it's not a big investment.
Yep.
All right. So yeah, I was saying anything else you want to add?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, thanks for having me. And yeah, I hope people have found this interesting.
We do have one question. And do we have Windows code spaces? Currently, no. I know there was a beta, at least when the service was still called Visual Studio Code Spaces quite a while ago. There was something brewing in that direction, but I'm not sure if it's still there. Currently, for sure, we don't have Windows code spaces. Cool. All right. I think we can close here. There's no other questions. Mike, thank you so much for being part of this live tonight, or yeah, today in your case. It's 10:20 p.m. here, so my English starts to fade. So apologies for that. Any closing line?
Nothing from me. Thanks very much for having me as well. And yeah, I hope people enjoy using CodeSpaces, and I hope if they have problems that we fix them in a timely fashion.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, thanks everyone for being here tonight or today with me and with us. This live stream will also be converted in a podcast. So if you want to re-listen to it, go to your favorite podcast platform and search for Coder Dave, and in maybe tomorrow, maybe a couple of days, you'll have the podcast up there. And with this, again, thanks so much to everyone attending tonight, and I'll see you in the next video. Bye.
Bye.